Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network.
Home of comedy,
culture,
adventures,
and ghosts.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched Sunshine. Sunshine is a 2007 science fiction psychological thriller film directed by Danny Boyle and written by Alex Garland. Taking place in the year 2057, it follows a group of astronauts who are on a dangerous mission to reignite the dying sun. Tommy, this is your passion watch?
Yes, it is. I fucking love Sunshine. I watched Sunshine for the first time. You know when video and DVD rental places existed?
Yeah.
And you occasionally they would have X rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So like you'd go in and they'd have like, you'd have the things you could rent and then like at the front they'd be like, a box of like 50 movies for like $2.
Yeah.
Where they'd obviously brought it in when it was a new release. They had like 10 copies. Now it's going to weekly, so they only need one or two.
Yeah.
And you could buy an extra rental. And we used to go in there all the time. We lived around the corner from a Blockbuster. Very dangerous, actually, where we lived. We lived around the corner from a Blockbuster. And across the road from that Blockbuster, a KFC. Just so dangerous.
That's just a good night waiting to happen.
So dangerous to be there. I used to work at that KFC. You go on your lunch break, you'd have your little chips, you'd go across in a Blockbuster.
Do you know what I think about KFC? Do they have fans at the windows or something? The smell is so strong.
It's pumping out of there.
Like, if I'm driving on the road,
yes,
I can smell it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I'm going through an intersection.
It comes out through the top because I've got a pump.
By design?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's just...
I reckon a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be foolish not to, because, yeah, there's one...
Talking about KFC right now, fuck, I could go...
Problematic.
It's funny. I'll go some popcorn chicken. You froth KFC, Tom.
Yeah.
For me, it's just never been like a... I think we just weren't KFC people when I was younger.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't tell you what's on the menu. Like, a zinger.
Zinger,
and they
popcorn
do...
Chicken, mate, popcorn chicken, mate, chippies.
Yeah, but I don't know the rest
potato
of it.
Potato and gravy.
Like, whereas, like, the McDonald's menu, I know
three
what's on the
menu. Three-piece feed. We're a bigger KFC hold than a McDonald's house.
I have anxiety if I have to go to the KFC drive-thru.
Oh, right.
Because I just don't know what they have. I don't have enough time.
Are you a Red Rooster boy?
Yeah, you could say, yeah.
Which is for non-Aussie, I'm guessing it's an Australian Red Rooster.
Red Rooster 100% feels Australian.
Yeah. Which is just like a charcoal chicken.
I haven't had Red Rooster for a long time.
Yeah.
Because the last time I went there, I had food poisoning.
Oh, look, fair enough.
Yeah.
Also, generally, if you're going to go to a Red Rooster and you also have a charcoal chicken in your suburb or town, just go to the charcoal chicken.
Yeah.
Well, always done that. Times better.
Yeah.
I will say the best thing about Red Rooster, and here's a tip for anyone. If you're ever in Australia or if you are Australian and you love Red Rooster, you can buy a mini foil garlic bread from Red Rooster.
Mm-hmm.
And that fits in the drink holder of most Nissan Micras.
Okay. There you go.
That would have been great before that car got stolen, Tom.
Yeah. Hey, my Nissan Micra is stolen. The listeners may not be. Yeah.
And whoever stole it, hey, maybe they're still driving.
Maybe they'll give it back. They found it. It was
fun. Oh, it was done.
Why did they find it?
They found the license plate and a bunch of it, and they were like, it was used to steal fuel.
It's a cube by now.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe. Maybe it's got a different plate on it.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, no, because then that plate was from another stolen car.
Your car did have that big scratch on the side, though, from when you parked at the studio and someone just absolutely dogged you.
Yeah, I did, yeah. They sideswiped me so hard, they punctured the tyre.
For so long after your car got stolen, anytime I saw a Micra on the road, I would move lanes to see if I could see the scratch on the side. Never found it.
Nah, I love that little car.
Yes.
Bought that car for a Sri Lankan family, and when I was there, they asked if I wanted to stay for dinner, and I really wanted to say.
Oh, yes. You should so have.
Lovely.
I really wanted it because they were cooking. Yeah. Fuck, it smelled good.
They were doing the KFC trick. They were pumping it out. Like, Tom, come on in.
Come and buy a car. Anyway, so I got Sunshine as like a collection. Yeah. We used to like get collections of X rentals and took it home. And I reckon it would have been like, it probably was the year it came out or the year after it came out, like 2008, 2007. I'm probably like 16, 17. And I remember watching it and just being like, what the fuck? What? Why has no one told me about this movie? Why haven't I heard everything about this movie? And I had the same conversation with my partner. We were watching it together the other night. And she's like, why didn't I hear about this?
Mm.
And then the year it came out the same year as The Dark Knight and Iron Man.
Ah, okay.
2007.
Yeah. Same time?
Probably a different part of the year, I reckon.
Because it's not the same movie.
Like, no, not at all. But in terms of like a big blockbuster that would have got the hype and the focus.
Oh, it wouldn't have been a big blockbuster though. Like there's definite budget here, but this is not comic book budget.
No, but comic book budget only just started in that year.
That's a good point.
So this is like a big, it's Danny Boyle, it's Garland. The cast is stacked up the asshole.
Oh, everyone in that cast is enormous except for one guy.
The guy who plays the comms.
I feel bad. I'm sure everyone makes that joke about him. So he did a good job in it. He was a fine performer. I also had a video store thing with this as well, where you know how they used to just like give away the old posters and stuff.
Yeah.
So I had the poster on my wall for a little while before I'd even watched the movie.
Great poster.
It was a great poster. You got the bloody Cillian Murphy. His bloody eyes. My God.
Yes.
This is probably staring into the sun.
Yeah,
this is probably the movie that has most captured the beauty of that man's eyes. I reckon. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, the cast, fucking insane.
Were they, but was it insane at the time or have they gone on to be insane?
Not really.
But that was about it.
Rose Byrne, she would have been also in Damages at the time as well, I think.
Okay, okay.
The Damages was 2005, I think. So she's on
TV. You've got Chris Evans. He's not Captain America yet.
No.
He's only done like...
But he's done Fantastic Four.
He's done Fantastic Four. He does this. Cillian Murphy... He's Scarecrow.
Right.
But no, he's not a household name.
No.
Haruki Sanada's been doing heaps, but not a lot of Western stuff.
No. He has done Last Samurai at this point.
He's also on Lost at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Then you've got Benedict Wong, who wouldn't have been super massive at this point, would have been doing a bit. Cliff Curtis has been in a few bits and pieces by this point.
Yeah.
Big Cliff.
He would have been in Training Day.
Yep.
It's Cliff in Training Day.
Yeah.
Maybe I should watch that.
You should. And then
Michelle Yao, she's done everything at this point. Her career's big at this point. She'd be the biggest name. Or her or Mark Strong at the time.
Yeah, well, so...
Mark Strong.
Basically, when they got her on board...
Everyone else got on board?
No, sorry. Danny Boyle basically said to her, you can have any role you want. I don't care what the gender is. We'll swap it. You call the shots. And then she chose her character.
Ah, that's really interesting.
Because he just was that impressed by her work.
It's such an awesome ensemble. And then the other thing that...
I wonder if she's a gardener, if that's what appealed to her with that role.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe it's just that, like, there's a bit of hope that, like, she was, like, a character who, like, when all the stuff burned and she's, like, burning, she feels like she's burning, like...
Yeah.
It's a powerful little moment.
Like, outside of Cillian Murphy, and probably Chris Evans. Chris Evans has a juicy little bit to do.
Yeah.
The Michelle Yao role is probably the best one.
Yeah.
If I had to pick...
Cliff is... You know what? No, I'm an idiot. Hiroyuki Sanada's role is great too.
This is the thing. All the roles...
I'll tell you which role I wouldn't want. Rose Byrne.
Yeah.
All right. Not Harvey.
Okay.
So Harvey was the one...
Super impressed by that unknown man. He's incredible.
That great bit...
You might want to take that back in a second because I've got
a piece of shit?
No, he's not a piece of shit. But the character is based off of a piece of shit.
Is the character called Harvey and is it based off Harvey Weinstein?
Bingo.
Ah, yes. That's so good. They make him a coward.
He's based on Harvey Weinstein.
Yes.
I want to say that I like the performance of the actor. Yeah.
Oh, you know, the actor's great. That bit when he's...
I don't respect his decision. Yeah.
That bit when he's demanding... what's his name?
That's very
take off the suit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is such a great little set.
What the fuck?
No, but he'll take you. This is an order, and
I'm the captain.
And no one gives him anything. Nah. So it is so funny to know that Garland, that's Harvey Weinstein.
So it was actually Danny Boyle who did it. So basically, because Danny Boyle had to work with them for Train Spotting, and they kept trying to cut more scenes, cut all the disturbing scenes, and he was just like obviously found Harvey Weinstein to be very, in his words, rude and snappy attitude, very arrogant superiority complex. And so basically, this character's called Harvey because he's having a bit of a dig at Harvey Weinstein.
So Garland wrote the script and Boyle's read it and gone, can we call this one Harvey?
Yeah.
We'll wait till Michelle Yao picks one. And
yeah,
then...
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, that's the other thing about how is this movie not more loved and bigger is it's Danny Boyle and it's the team from 28 Days Later teaming up again.
Mm.
Garland obviously then goes on to do your Ex Machinas and your Annihilations and so on. But
yeah,
like this is a juicy combo.
Do you think it came too soon? Like this almost feels like, so I was very much like a man. I really knew nothing about this until you said we should watch Sunshine. I'm like, yeah, I'll find out what that movie is and then we can watch it. And then, yeah, same thing as what you just described. The cast, the creative team behind it, you're like, holy shit, why have I not seen this? Because it kind of does feel like it could almost slip into some of what Nolan's done with some of his work.
It's also beautiful to look at.
Truly stunning. Like, truly, like... You get why Curtis is horny for the sun.
That scene...
I've never seen a man who wants to fuck a sun so bad.
There are two scenes that when I was going into this... Sunshine has two of some of my... like. I love it so much because there's two of like my favorite scenes. Like you have scenes that are your favorites. There are two in this.
Okay,
yes. One of them is when Cliff is, Haruki's outside and the sun's coming and everyone's trying to convince him to come back in and Cliff just comes in and goes, what do you see? Tell me what you see. And he starts yelling.
Yeah.
Kaneda, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. And like, tell him to come back in. And he won't do it.
Nah.
He has to know. And I also love my other favorite scene. Spoilers, because this is in the late in the movie, is where they basically come to terms with Benedict Wong's character has killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Yeoh's like, there's now enough oxygen for us to deliver the bomb.
Yeah.
And they're running, they're doing all the jobs. They're all kind of depressed. They're out of breath. And Cillian Murphy is doing that stuff with the bomb, just testing it out. And he's talking to Icarus and he's like, what's the chances of success now? And Icarus is like, zero.
Mm.
And he's like, what do you mean? There's enough oxygen on board for four crew members. And she's like, yes. He's like, there are four crew members. And she just comes back with five crew members.
Mm.
And the whole movie just pivots on its ass. It's such a good little reveal. And you're like, what the fuck is happening now? It's at exactly the right point too. It's just, it's so good.
Can I say, I think it's a great reveal. My brain ruined it because I thought, Rose Byrne must be pregnant. That's what I thought it meant by the fifth member.
And then he's like, where's the fifth member? The sunroom. You're like, that's really weird.
Right. No, Holly basically said, I think someone sneaked on board from the... I'm like, okay, yes. Yeah. Oh, wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
Rose Byrne's the weakest part of the film.
Yeah.
For me, as she was when I watched a film called Two Hands. She needs a good character and she needs a good script and she doesn't have the best parts of this script and her character kind of sucks to the point where she is... basically the most depressed person on the ship.
Yeah.
She can't sleep.
She can't sleep, except for one scene where she comes in and she's sitting on Kappa's bed when he wakes up. And she's like giddy and giggling and smiling. Yeah, and it's like, this feels like it's from a different cut of the movie. There's more to your character.
Mm. I would argue that the reason... I think she has suffered a bit from the cut. But I think the reason she's happy and giddy at that point is that's the moment where she comes and she tells him, you made the right call to go to Icarus One.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's depressed because she's like, there's nothing to be hopeful for.
Mm.
And now it's like... we're going to potentially save people, maybe?
Oh, no, that's great. But that's two different characters. Because you never again see that character for the rest of the film.
No.
I know events transpire that would sort of block that. But, like, everyone else has a consistent character throughout the thing. But she's just... and wasted as well.
Yes. So, two things. One, I did read that there was a version of the script where her and... old man has a sex scene.
Yeah.
And then Garland and Boyle, like, no one's doing that. It's like, they've got other things they need to think of. That's crazy.
Yeah, let's try it. There's not enough oxygen.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Chris Evans and Killing can't even fight.
I was saying to you that that scene where she's quite happy and completely different from every other scene she's in, it has like the remnants of like the studio wanted a love interest character.
Well, it's interesting that, this is like 2006, 2007. There isn't a romance subplot shoehorned in here.
Yeah. Like, obviously there was and they've cut it.
Which is huge because like and how many movies like that
they've just left that. Too many little remnants of
it. I will also say for her character, I think considering who they would hire, as much as this is the second version of this mission, who they would hire for this mission and the stakes of this mission and how important it is, the fact that she's a bit of a bleeding heart who's not willing to like make the incredibly hard calls in for the sake of the entire human race doesn't jive. Like I get from a human perspective going,
oh, definitely.
We can't kill one man to save millions. But I just think for this cast, they should kind of all be on board.
That scene's a Kappa. Yep. I mean, it reads as quite cold. It's like, what are you asking? Like the fate of the world versus one man, kill him. And it's like, oh, you cold bastard. But also, there's a people of science. And
yeah,
it's like, they're definitely making the right choice.
Yeah.
So on that too, one of my favorite things about this is Chris Evans' character is depicted as such an asshole many times in the movie. but every single decision he makes makes sense because the only thing he cares about more than anything, basically he has that little blow up at the start.
Yeah.
Cliff Curtis tells him to pull his head in and he says, I won't lose track again.
Yeah.
And from that point on,
he doesn't.
He's all about mission.
Yeah.
Often to the detriment, like, so it just seems like he's a prick.
Yeah.
There's that whole bit where he's like, nah, Kappa's, I volunteer. I volunteer Kappa because you're the reason we have to do this. So you better go and fix it.
Yeah. That's the only one that's too vindictive because Kappa is the guy that needs to be there for the bomb.
That's true.
So that is actually a stupid thing. And like the captain allows it to happen because Kappa willingly is like, fine, I'll do it. All right, fine. They're not going to waste time fighting. But that's the only time when like he's too emotional. It's not about the mission there. It's about getting back at this guy.
And what I love too is he's like saves Kappa's life. And he's like, no, Kappa needs to be the one in the suit. And if we all die, we all die.
Yeah.
Because he's more important than all of us. Even when he gets back after doing that and saves his life and makes that choice. And they get in that fight because he's still fucking furious with him.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's so funny because the first sort of real scene of Evans we get is that his emotion is running him. When it's what an interesting introduction when for the rest of it, it really is logic. Like he's the fucking man in this movie. He's the only one making sense, he's the only one making the right decisions, doing what's needed. Like I found myself really, truly rooting for him, especially in that final scene where he like
hero moment.
Fucking massive hero moment.
There's good deaths in this. He gets a great death. Sonata gets a great death as well. And they both have that same
Cliff gets a very
Cliff
good death.
Gets a great death.
Cliff is rock hard mid orgasm at the point of death.
Yeah.
That went straight to Stardust. And that's all he ever wanted.
The opening of the film too, where he's doing the sun thing and you see that he loves the sun. And then they just like drip feed that he is becoming into this sun thing. And then like about half of the movie, you see him again suddenly under fluorescent lights and he's fucked.
His face is fucked.
I don't understand why no one is caught being like, hey, mate, you need to pull it back a bit.
Because they're all-
Because he's the guy. He's the one to tell them to pull it back.
True, yeah.
Everyone's locked in on the mission, man. Yeah. Everyone's crazy.
But also by that point, things have started to go wrong because that's when they've heard the distress signal. They're heading towards the Icarus One.
It's so funny. So you've got a guy like him on this mission because of the isolation of it, because of the environment.
Yeah.
But like, what's the safeguard? Who's his person?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Which one of the crew is the one that he needs to go
definitely,
to? Because you'd have to have that on this kind of mission.
I think it's Haruki is his.
Okay. So he goes.
But Haruki's also got a bit of sun horniness as well.
He actually does. Yeah.
Which I got to say, I really liked for the pin. What's the character?
Pinbacker.
That we kind of see. I was thinking for Curtis's character. I'm like, oh, so I wasn't expecting him to take this sacrifice and make that play. I was really expecting him to basically do the pinbacker role where he was going to turn on everyone and be like, no, the sun. We got to fuck the sun.
Well, pinbacker's thing is God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to his character in a bit because I've got a lot to say about that as well. But for Curtis' character, on reflection, I'm like, no, they've done it perfectly. It's like, it's not just this one guy who kind of gets obsessed with this bigger element, whether it's son or God or whatever. We actually see Curtis and Sonata both have a bit of it, obviously to varying degrees. And it kind of shows, anyone who's faced with this mammoth monstrosity and the scope of it has the chance of... It's like something your brain has never come across and to be that close to and be part of it.
Yeah.
And so Curtis being like the guy who's like very horny for sun, but still understands the importance of the mission was really good. Cause then you can have the guy who's very horny for sun and doesn't understand the importance of the mission anymore.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. You can kind of see the sliding scale of how far it can go rather than just one guy who's kind of lost the plot.
Yeah. It does such an awesome job at that. One thing I really want to point out I love is John Murphy's music.
Oh, the score.
So there's that one track in particular, it's called Adagio in D minor, and it comes up when Sonata sacrifices himself, and then it comes up again later when Chris Evans does, and Cap is in the suit doing his thing.
Yes.
That for me is the highlight of the movie.
The bomb finally lights up.
That's the best sequence of the movie for me. I love it. And like that music is so fucking good.
It's powerful.
That was probably one of like the first times watching a movie where I was like the power of a score. Like I've listened to that. So this movie came out when I was in film school. I watched it heaps and I listened to that score so many times.
Right.
Like I think I listened to movie scores on repeat the way like people listen to bands.
Yes.
That song is so fucking great and it's popped up in other stuff. Like it's been reused in Kick-Ass.
Also by John Murphy.
Which is a fantastic scene and it's unfortunately pops up in Wonder Woman 1984 for some reason. Yeah. Which has such a vibe of temp music. Like, they chucked it on during the edit and then didn't compose something else.
Yeah, okay.
Like, at least with Kick-Ass, they sort of merged it with the other song that he has and they sort of... It worked perfectly for that sequence.
It's funny that... So, that song's called that and then I've seen it by another name where I've seen it by The Surface of the Sun because that's the line that Rose Byrne says every time he
climbs. I remember re-listening to it heaps as a... Oh, it must have been... 20 or whatever. I can't remember, 18 yeah. maybe. And that line, like her dialogue's in the music track. Yeah. And I remember being kind of annoyed by it.
Every time you close your eyes.
Yeah.
I love that line. That whole thing where she's like, let me guess, like, because that's all they're seeing.
Yeah.
Every time they close their eyes, the surface of the sun. But yeah, I do love the score and the way they blended in Kick-Ass with the other one from 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
In the house in a heartbeat.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm. Which is the bit that plays at the end when he gouges the guy's eyes out. Then
yeah.
she doesn't kill him in the heartbeat. And he says that was longer than a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Well, talking about emotions.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Boys, where are we scared?
I'd like to talk to you about this, Damo.
Okay.
Because Tom and I have seen this multiple times in the past. You'd never seen it.
No.
We're doing a horror podcast.
Yes.
How did you feel going into it? Because by my count, I think it's about the 44-minute mark.
Right.
Is that right, Tom? Around 44 minutes?
Is that when the Icarus One shows up?
When they board Icarus One.
Yeah.
And you start to get the little flashes of the crew members' faces.
Yeah. That's when things start to ramp up.
That, for me, on rewatches, is when I would talk about when the fear comes in. But for you, approaching this.
So I think because of the premise and because we've watched these movies, things like Alien, things like what's the one where they literally pass through hell in space?
Oh, Event Horizon.
Event Horizon. Like things like that, I was sort of inbuilt to be like, okay, well, this is going to get fucked at some point. So there was tension right from the get-go, I'll say. Also, space is fucked. Space is inherently
terrifying. You are on your own.
As well as, like, you're never going to watch a space movie where everything just works out okay.
Oh, yeah, it always goes
bad. At some
point,
something is going to go fucked. And so, like, the idea of, like, just a space movie like Gravity or even Apollo 13 is a bit, like, has a tension element to it. So if you've got that and then you tell me, by the way, it's also going to have some horror things at some point. Yeah, I'm already on edge.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, that was never a question. And especially, like, seeing Curtis literally be so horny for the sun so early, I genuinely was like, oh, well, there's our lunatic. Like,
yeah, you thought he's going to be the traitor.
He wants to throw everyone into the sun. Yeah. So, yeah, I was, and no one was calling him on it, which was really getting me frustrated.
Yeah.
But again, like you said, he's the guy you would talk to about that sort of stuff. So I was like, we've got a problem here. And then, so all that sort of stuff was building up for me to go, okay, this is a bit scary. And then as soon as old mate finds the, hears the sound and plays in the sound.
That sound, that distress signal sound, is that.
It's very good. Over and over again. Very good.
Such a spooky sound.
And then the flashes of faces was fucking brilliant. Like, scary, but I was also very impressed. Yeah, really.
I've seen this movie multiple times, and even when the faces started flashing again, I was like, oh,
because I don't,
Danny Boyle, you motherfucker.
I don't always gel with Boyle's choices, and in the third act of this, I definitely didn't.
Hey, I agree with you.
Okay.
However, I still give it 4.5, and I love it so much.
Great.
It's incredibly flawed.
Yeah,
cool. The third act is... We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
We'll get it to our next question. Yeah. We'll hit up that act.
Yeah, Boyle is cooking in this. He does some shots that are just fucking nuts. Mm. Even early on too. Like the shots of like close-ups of people's eyes behind sunglasses, the sound of like skin rasping, the weird little flashes. I find this movie gets like scary once they go there, but then also as soon as they make the decision to deviate from the mission, the anxiety builds.
Yeah. Oh,
and everything suddenly becomes so much more stressful and so big. Like even that scene where they have to fix the mirrors and Benedict Wong is just losing his fucking shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get that great throwaway line of Chris Evans being like, don't kill yourself, man. We're going to be fine.
Right. I mean, like, things, it does, like, even though we don't get onto Icarus 1 until whatever, the 45 minutes in, things definitely go wrong before that. Like, quite a few different things go wrong pretty quickly. Like, there is a brief moment of, like, this mission's going great. Like, I think it's a nice touch and a very interesting touch to have Kappa talking to his family, telling them how it's going to be when you see that sunlight in the sky.
You know it's worked.
You know it's worked. We're on our way home, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's so positive.
If you wake up one day to a particularly beautiful morning, you know it's worked.
Yeah, which immediately your story brain's like, cool. That's how we'll finish. Like, that's going to be, that has to be our end.
That's a good ending.
Which works great. That's the only part of the third act I liked. But yeah, so I kind of remember what my fucking point was.
Everything's going well, so you know things are going to fuck up.
Yeah.
But also the tension of the fuckery is like, it's not just the deviation. So the deviation happens, Benedict Wong does, and you just see the little mistakes and they just domino.
Yeah.
So Benedict Wong does all the calculations.
Yeah.
He forgets about the tilt of the shield thing.
Yeah.
And so he's losing his shit about that. They then go out to fix that. And as part of that, they're like, look, we're going to have to, Rose Byrne's like, I'm going to move the ship.
Yeah.
So they get more shade. And the guy's like, that'll affect my comms. And it's like, yep, that's going to be part of it. So when the comms catches fire, Chris Evans is like, yep, we know. Shut off all, like, don't tell us about any problems there.
Yes.
Which means that as the comms get worse and worse and worse and worse, the ship doesn't tell them.
As the comms are now reflecting light, the insane light of the sun straight into their fucking garden.
Into their garden. And it's burning more and it's spinning around more and they don't
know. That's stressful. That's that stress of, we
know
something they don't know and it's so big and so important.
Because they start celebrating and then the next shot is that garden catching fire and that's when the ship's like, retaking manual control.
Yeah.
And then them scrambling, being like, no. She's like, yeah, because the mission is compromised. And that's my default position.
That's when I have to step in. Yeah. Yeah. So all that stuff's really good. And then for like, once they're on the Icarus One, I think that's played really great. Again, you sort of, it's that level of confusion, the dust everywhere, ash everywhere is very good. And then especially when they do get decoupled and we don't really know why, like I didn't know why. I don't know why.
The only hint they kind of give you is just before they get decoupled, they show you that Benedict Wong's character is awake.
Yes.
And you've heard him be sedated. Yes. You see him staring and then he walks out of the room because he overhears Chris Evans say the computers don't work. So even though the bomb's intact, the garden's there, all the things are working, computers are fucked, we can't do anything.
It's useless.
Mm. So he hears that information. There's a brief moment you're like, oh, did it just malfunction because everything's going wrong? Did he actively do it because he's depressed and is like, fuck the whole mission?
Yeah, yeah.
It's juicy.
Yeah. So overall, I will say, yes, I was scared for this one. I was definitely, it's just that on edge, tense. Again, I think space movies do this really well where it's literally like a little hard to breathe. And like, obviously it's hard to breathe in space, but like genuinely, like you're kind of getting that feeling.
Yeah. When I watched it for the first time, I wasn't 4% braver as I am now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, very scared.
Yeah.
Like, it's terrifying. And especially the Icarus One stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That's just fucked. And then I think, a lot of people would say that third act is when it does swing into horror movie sort of mode.
Pinback is a fucking yuck man to look at. He looks fucked.
He does when you can get a proper
when you actually
look at it.
Do we ever see him? I don't really know.
Do you guys not like that?
No, I don't like the way he shot it.
I love it.
I think it almost, Tom, it almost destroys the film.
I agree.
You reckon?
A film that I love and give 4.5 stars.
Such
is the power of John Murphy and hope and humanity. Mm-hmm. This movie survives.
Can I ask our next question? Because this feels like it should be part of that conversation. Did our characters act wisely or foolishly?
They make terrible decisions, but
also impossible decisions to make.
The decisions they make to go to Icarus One makes sense. Kappa runs the narrative and it's like, we can't go past 47%.
The logic they give us, the motivation to do so.
Yep.
They sell it. And I'm like, at the start, I'm like, no, stupid. I'm completely with Chris Evans. Why would you ever do that? And then by the end, I'm like, I still don't know if it's the right choice, but I get that it's
two bombs better than one.
Yeah, it's at least an equal choice in terms of its viability sort of thing.
And just the thing of like, we'll go and we'll look.
Yeah.
And then if it's not fine, we're close enough that we won't lose that much fuel.
What's their plan though? Like, are they planning for half the crew to jump onto that ship and then pilot that ship?
Yes, I guess. Yeah, yeah.
It seems wild to me.
It is a wild plan. Yeah. So third act.
Yeah, so this is where you question, because at this point I'm okay with them making bad logic choices. Yeah. Do you know why? They are oxygen deprived and have been for some time.
Not for long enough.
These are some of the smartest people on Earth. I don't know.
Are they? I reckon the smartest people on Earth are on the Icarus One.
Okay, well, even if you had
to, I don't know why, but for some reason I thought he was going to say, are in this room.
Sean, definitely not.
No fucking way, mate.
Even the top 20 smartest people on Earth, this is like for the whole planet. They've got to be getting the right
people. Well, they're good at what they do, I think. But again, everything goes wrong once they go to the Icarus One. And the mistakes, so the mistake that they make about the shield thing.
Yeah.
I understand why they're almost at the end of the journey.
Yeah.
And isn't that when you drop the ball? Like,
I guess.
If you're going to drop the ball, you're going to. So Rose Byrne, she hasn't slept. So that's why she's fucking up. Like, that's why she's probably more susceptible to the way she is. Like, all the little things they become preoccupied on, and this isn't even the third act, but all the little mistakes they make in that little sequence getting to Icarus Run are because they deviate. And they then make little mistakes, and each little mistake snowballs because of the nature of the thing.
Yeah. No, I can agree with that. And then even, like, there are moments, there are definitely moments where they're acting wisely, where they're like, shit, big problem, how are we going to solve it?
Yep.
And they do, like...
The insulation to get back across.
Yeah, juicy. Yeah, very good.
That's a great scene.
Yeah, very nice scene. And, like, I also respect for most people, bar one, they're willing to make the sacrifice play.
Yep.
Like, they all do understand the importance of this mission, and so there's no... hesitation there, which again, and
the moment they realize that they'll get there, but they won't be able to get back.
Yes,
and they're okay with that.
Completely fine.
That is a nice moment for Chris Evans' character, because Tom, I think you said it earlier. On the surface, he looks like an asshole. He's the asshole of the movie, but everything is all about the mission. But then you have that moment where, without hesitation, he's like, "We have one suit. Cap is going to wear it because he needs to survive."
Yeah,
and then you have that Harvey.
Just,
a bloody cowardly custard.
Yeah, big time, and not the good kind of cowardly.
No, not the good kind.
The toxic shit kind.
Yeah.
So that third act, let's just dive right in, because for me, it felt unconnected to a lot of what had come before. I adored the first two acts of this movie. I was very impressed. And then all of a sudden, like, I think it's a great turn of there's a fifth person on board. I don't understand why he is somewhat supernatural. This is a movie so grounded in logic. It's doing, like, even the way the sun is dying. It's not the sun dying, because our sun won't die for millions upon millions upon millions of years. It's this other thing that they can, like, it's the science holds up, basically. It's
Brian Cox.
Yeah, Brian Cox was a consultant.
Yes. Yeah,
so the science of it is reasonably sound.
Right. So then I don't understand why this guy who's burned to the shit house, has been eating God knows what for the last 5 years, is somehow able to lift people in the air. People can't even get a good look at him.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's like, he's literally supernatural. Like, that just was so, to me, unnecessary. And I read, like, a lot of people's reviews. And basically, there's two camps. People who love it, the Tom camp, and people who are just like, why? Why did you do that? You had such a terrific film on your hands. And then even the hard turn into talking about God and that sort of stuff. And I understand there were drafts of this thing that was a bigger element, the God-atheist sort of argument. But ultimately, I think they made the right call stripping it back to what they did. It was there subtly in the underplay. But, like, the story of this cast of characters doing or not doing what they should be doing in the situation, to me, was far more interesting and fascinating and human-driven than all of a sudden this esoteric kind of wank fest for me. I know that's very cynical and rude, but genuinely, I was really disappointed by that last act.
See, I love the turn. I love that they solve the problem. They're going to do it. It's going to be fine. And then the only thing they've not accounted for is the guy who took down Icarus One. The thing I love too is that you're like, they can't survive. They named both of the ships going to the sun after the guy who died trying to fly to the sun.
Yeah.
Like, call your ship something else, guys.
Yeah.
Call your ship Sun King or someone who's like, call your ship Apollo or like Superman,
right.
Because he's powered by the sun. Call your ship Kal-El, right?
Yeah.
That's what you should be calling it.
Yeah.
Don't call it Icarus, guys. The naming of the ship people did not act wisely.
No, that was very foolish. But I don't even have an issue with Pinbreaker being on the thing. It's just the way it's delivered.
See, I love the way he's shot and that you don't... So, okay, Killian doesn't get a good look at him the first time he sees him because he's in the sunroom.
Yeah, but no. It's a choice by Boyle. It's a
deliberate choice.
That anytime people look at him, it's hazy, it's jutting. Like, it's also fucking, was genuinely unpleasant, like a hard watch.
I like that because he's literally it's like looking at the sun because he's been...
Why? He's just a man.
Yeah.
They stab him, funny. He bleeds. Why, Tom?
Are you saying...
Tell me why.
Here's the question I'll put to you. Do you both believe
Questions, give me answers, boy.
I will through this. Do you both believe that... Others can't see him because he's genuinely looking like that to them? Because I think the only time that people can't really get a read on what he looks like is that one scene with Killian and him in the room.
No. It happens so many times.
It happens with all of them.
It happens. Yeah. Literally, Damien Robb never got a good look at him.
Because I just think it's an aesthetic choice in the same way the flashes of the photos are an aesthetic choice.
Yeah, I think that's what's driving it, but it's too much. It's more. It's saying that there is something about this guy that no one can look at him.
Like, I don't
there are multiple times. There's like one point where someone looks at him through a door. It's just there's no extra light. There's no sun shining through, but it goes all crazy.
Yeah, but that's what we're... I think it's a visual effect for us. I don't think the characters are actually seeing him
Why, Tom?
I think it's a cool artistic choice.
I think it's a choice, but I can't see the logic behind it.
It's just not a good one.
No, you don't like the artistic choice.
I don't understand the artistic choice. I'm all for artistic choices. I don't know what the logic I'm meant to be reading from
It's a bad one.
It lessens the film.
I think it does.
But if you're saying there are split reviews between people who are in my camp, people who are in your camp, I think...
It's because crazy people exist.
Yeah. Like Pinbacker.
No, I'm all for it. Again, the flashes of the photos, I understand that artistic choice and I'm 100% there
that,
for
that
it.
That to me is completely different to the way that Pinbacker is presented.
But I don't understand that's this just artistic
subliminal,
choice.
That's subliminal horror. It's right, just them putting little faces and then you finally piece together when you see the photograph.
The full photo, yeah.
This is...
I think it's a great visual cooked choice. It's very Danny Boyle.
It's a cooked choice, but again, I don't think there's actual... It's like, oh, that's a cool thing to do. That's fine, but I think
for it to work,
you need more than just a cool idea.
He's an emissary of the god, which...
By what logic?
Like, he's an angel.
By what? That's the insanity of his mind.
No.
What logic should he visually look like that? And to Damo's earlier point, have supernatural strength where he can pick people up. I say this saying to you, I love this movie. I think it's fucking fantastic.
He picks one person up.
You only need one.
Why can he do that? He's burnt to the shithouse.
Why can he do that?
She's tiny.
What?
And does he cop 100% sun at one point?
Yeah.
Killian
says full sun
and closes the door. There.
Yeah, he cops it.
How?
Yeah.
How, when 4% is how? Completely destroying your retina.
Tom, it's Danny Boyle got lost in this visual gimmick that he wanted to try, and it hurt the story he was trying to tell.
I think you're both cynics.
No, it's not that. You're both losers.
It definitely ruined my experience of the movie. It dropped a full star, I would say.
I like the turn. I'm a big fan of that. But I think you could probably achieve a similar thing with Cliff Curtis. Mm. I think you could have him be a Jack Torrance type figure where he's just gone insane and he's trying to stop the mission. You don't need to have a supernatural force to it. I also don't mind that it's Pinbacker.
No, that's fine too.
If Danny Boyle had presented it cinematically as he had for the rest of the film, great. A little thriller about an unhinged captain of a ship trying to stop the mission. Awesome. But the way that he's a god. He's got super... It is super strength, Tom.
It's just Rose Byrne, right?
Do you think you could pick Rose Byrne up just by on. The throat
was
over
it Rose
your
Byrne?
Head?
I thought it was Killian.
Yeah, it's Killian Murphy.
He's holding Killian over the side.
In the sunroom.
Isn't it when he's in the bomb?
Doesn't he pick him up
just
in the
before
sunroom?
He gets degloved?
He lifts Killian.
I think he
up.
Picks multiple people up.
No, you're right. It is just Killian, and it is in the bomb room.
So it's Killian Murphy, not a small lad.
What's happening at that point in the movie, boys?
I don't know. It's losing the plot.
No, what is physically happening in the movie at that point?
Gravity still exists if that's the train you're going down because he falls down.
Yes. And then what happens?
You need to tell me. I don't know where you're
Whether he's got superhuman strength or whatever, he's a supernatural force because he gets to 100% sun.
At that point in the movie, they're falling into the sun.
There's still the much bigger argument of all the other stuff about him that's getting delivered to us.
I think it's great. The bit where he's falling, that whole bit with the super strength part in that bomb room, is when the bomb is falling into the sun. And earlier in the film, Killian is explaining to Haruki to Rose Byrne what would have happened and how gravity and felt force and physics and all these things kind of collapse in and fall all over themselves.
But that's what happens when we get that final shot of him. That to me was what the setup for that was, where he's sort of almost between the sun and the bomb and he's just standing there looking at it.
I always took it as it's both, like basically from the minute that they're in the bomb, and that's how they're able to stand up on the side of the bomb.
But that's because it's turned. But before that, he falls.
Yeah, he does.
He falls.
How's Pinbacker able to look down over them when they're also standing up? They look at one another.
But by then it's shifted. I can understand by then, but up until then he's holding him and he falls straight down, which says to me the full force of gravity is currently on him.
Sure. And then it doesn't. I just think...
How does he take 100% sun?
He's been cooking.
I just think, yeah, two-thirds of this movie are, like, masterful.
Yes.
And then he makes creative choices that I just don't think are
effective. I think it's a bit of a letdown. And then even the, for me, the Garland script of all of a sudden going very hard into the God stuff, I was like, I don't need this right now.
From Pinbaker, though.
It's there. Like, I'm not saying it's not there, but again, he went so hard into it in his third act to, again, to a degree that hadn't been there the rest of the time.
Well, no,
because
it
wasn't the story.
No, it is there, because when Pinbaker is the video that Haruki is watching, the Kaneda is watching of Pinbaker, he's sitting there and he's like, are you watching the Icarus One? Think about the Icarus One. And he watches the video. And in that video, Pinbaker makes just sort of a fleeting passing reference to God or to faith or something like that. And you can tell that it wouldn't take much for a man like that to be Cliff Curtis into thinking God wants us to die.
Again, I'm okay with all that. I can understand the logic behind him and he's lost it and he has these ideology. But the actual dialogue, the scripting in that third act for me was like, I don't understand why we're getting this diatribe coming at us in such a heavy degree. Again, I understand why it's there. I just don't understand the quantity where, again, I'm like, we're losing the actual elements of the plot. There was points I was confused in the third act as to what had happened, what he was trying to achieve. Like, I actually lost.
It's a messy edit.
It's a messy edit for sure.
Like, for Rose Byrne as well.
Yeah. Yes.
She's kind of here and then, okay, she's back again. Like, the only reason she's still alive right near the end is probably because of the remnants of she's the romantic love interest.
Right.
And we need an emotional hook at the end here or whatever. Like, it's pointless.
Yeah. So I just think, like, I can understand all the
pieces. It's a really tight film that becomes loose and messy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That film, again,
and
for our take,
I think it's probably Danny Boyle's intention. I just think it's the wrong one.
Yeah, this is where, like,
he's a maniac. Danny Boyle loves doing
some cooked shit. Because, like, there was even moments in 28 Days Later, some of the visual choices where I was like, nah, don't like some of the extreme lens flares and this sort of stuff that were just like blinding.
He gets excited by new toys and tech and just pushes it too far.
Yeah. So again, good for him, good for Tom. Didn't do it for me. Let me ask our final question. What would we do in this situation?
We are dead.
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 Yeah, I'm dead.
We're dead.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't think none of us have made the bomb.
All three of us like, wait, why are we on this fucking ship?
Why are we on this ship?
Did you say it's called Icarus?
We're on Icarus 1. Yeah. Pinbaker ate us, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, we fucking starved to death in the nuclear winter, in the solar winter in Sydney.
We're back in Sydney watching the harbour ice up.
Yeah, we're like, oh, fuck. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's all the decisions they make are so hard.
Yeah.
I don't know what we would do. And I think we're getting Cliff Curtis. Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
You're right with that.
The only thing I could say is that I wouldn't go to Icarus 1.
Okay, yeah.
But if you got outvoted. Because that's the problem. Chris Evans doesn't want to go to Icarus 1.
So you're Chris Evans in this situation.
Chris Evans, Harvey.
Harvey's a coward.
Who else doesn't want to? There's three that don't, and the others
Michelle
do.
Michelle Yao doesn't want to go.
No, she does, because the possibility of the plants.
Ah, okay. Loves those bloody plants.
The plants are one of the reasons. When they, oh, no, you're right. She's against it, and then she's for it because there's a possibility of their garden. Yeah. The oxygen garden.
Yes, because they lose that afterwards.
Yeah, it's the people who are for it are Sonata, Benedict Wong, and Killian eventually, but Rose Byrne, and then Killian's the deciding vote.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, no, it's not even a matter of deciding vote. It's just the captain says... You're going to make the choice.
Yeah. But in terms of, so tough.
Yeah. Fuck, imagine that being on
but
your
But no, but again, they're logical.
Yeah, yeah, you'll I pick understand the most, logical.
The one who should make it. It shouldn't be me, the captain. Look, it should be the physicist.
I would not want to be Killian, I'll say that.
The
much.
Shot of him after he says that just going, shit.
Great response.
So good.
All right, let's say this. We're definitely going to die because literally everyone does in this movie anyway.
How would you like to die?
Well, my question is going to be, do we get the bomb to the sun before we cark it?
I don't think we're capable of doing that. I'd like to think
we were
for humanity.
But
yeah.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Nah.
All right, how do you think you die?
Cliff
Tommy, are you coming in the sun?
I think I'm Cliff Kurt. I'd have to know. You'd have to know.
I would too. I'd have to know what that thing looks like at 100%.
You'll start us before the movie's even started.
We're like, we've just taken off. And all of a sudden, we just hear this, we come in, Sean's dead.
I'd be like, all right, we're into final preparations for this mission. It's all looking good. Do I have permission to fucking look at the sun now? Come on. And the captain would let me do it. He'd be like, I'm sick of hearing you jerk off over the sun. Just fucking go.
The captain looks at the manifest and is like, Three scared boys. They're not important to the mission. You guys can go get 100% sun.
Go get barbecue. Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like,
would you want to cop it through the window or like the captain does outside?
I like the window. Walk. I like
the window is nice. Sitting down and just sort of just taking it in.
Some more honor to it.
It does feel honorable, doesn't it?
Yeah, but imagine dying in space.
That's pretty good, actually.
I don't want to go the way Harvey goes.
Oh, the frozen shattering.
I was going to say, it'd be cool to be untethered and just floating in space.
No.
But if you're untethered, your back might be to it and you just die.
Yes. Oh, that's the real tragedy.
That's the worst.
Becoming untethered in space is maybe the worst thing of all time.
There is like, yeah, that's
you
akin.
Because you can't move.
Yeah, it's akin to being buried alive, I think. It's just that primal fear of like
you will starve panic. To death or die of dehydration or suffocate.
You just pull your lid off. You just wouldn't even.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like, okay.
Off we go.
Yep.
Wait till you're facing the sun and then pop it off.
Yep. Yeah. That's how we're going.
That's how we're doing it.
That is actually, I'm now thinking about being untethered in space and I want to throw up. Yeah. Like that is genuinely nauseating.
It's definitely worse than being buried alive.
I'm now thinking, no, they're both bad.
No, buried alive, at least you have that thought of, hey, maybe someone's going to come and dig me out.
Yeah.
Up there. No way.
No.
Lids off.
It's worse, but buried alive is very bad. But at least you can just quickly top the lid off.
That's true.
Space.
You take the is it easy to do that up there when you're untethered?
Have I to don't see right. why not. You've still got to move your arms and everything. I don't know.
How big is the process? Because I know whenever you have a scene.
You cannot move in space, King, because there's no friction.
No, but like whenever you have a scene.
You can move your arms, obviously.
But you can't propel yourself because there's no.
Well, you can kind of like, there is a limit to of like swimming. Well, actually, no, because. Because
if you've been knocked.
If you have some momentum already.
Yeah. The escape velocity, I don't know.
Yeah.
Velocity.
In this film, characters help other characters put suits on.
Yeah.
Can you take your own helmet off?
He does.
He does.
He takes his own suit off.
He does at the end.
I think it's just to make sure it's tight and secure.
Right.
Because once those gloves are on, you can't do shit.
Yeah.
Also, Harvey's doing a lot of the comm stuff for them.
Okay. Look, I think we pop it off.
You need a little button that you can just push and your entire suit just pops off.
It goes poof. Yeah. For a second, you're just hanging.
You just absolutely cop the heat.
Yeah.
Got to know what it feels like.
Hot, man.
Yeah. You don't know, though, do you?
Well, then, would you rather freeze in space or burn in the sun?
Am I going to die both ways?
I think it would be quicker.
Yeah, but you're going to die. I'll take the sun.
Okay.
Absolutely. Sun feels way quicker.
Yeah. Sun feels honorable.
Okay.
I don't know why. There's some honor to the sun. Honor in a sun death. I think it's honor because it's like being set on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have loved fire since day one of Scaredy Boys. True, it feels appropriate that you
freezing to death feels bad.
Burned at the
stake
like a witch.
Well, people say freezing
to
death is like you just like fall asleep. You kind of get numb. Warm.
Yeah, that would suck.
You know, like, just falling asleep.
Nah, burn.
Yeah, no, freezing in space though.
No, freezing in space is awful though. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, they're both, I just want to say this, controversial opinion. Both are bad.
Whoa, this kid. Holy shit. Both awful.
Yeah. As opposed to my favorite film, Sunshine, which is great.
Be pretty cool to ride the bomb down.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Don't know why. To have that moment of the here. Because here's the thing. If the pinbaker thing doesn't happen, we find that we've got enough oxygen for us. We can get the bomb there. But we know we can't come back. I'd want to be in the bomb room.
Yeah.
I don't want to just float into space. Put me in the bomb room. I want to see that thing. I want to go out with the bomb.
I want to get as close as I can to the sun.
I want to do that bit that Cillian Murphy does where he is both on the bomb and in the sun.
Yeah. That's heavy. That's good stuff.
That's how you want to go.
What if there's an opportunity, though, we drop the bomb and there's oxygen for two people?
Interesting.
So Damo and I make it home because, Sean, you want to go with Honor.
You have to know.
I mean, I was going to sacrifice myself for friendship anyway. Okay. So.
Beautiful.
For sonship.
I'll cop the sun.
You Cliff Curtis it.
I'll cop the sun so you guys can come back to Sydney Harbour or what is the opera house that's in there.
Do you know what I love? Just last little bit here. Yeah. Is that Cliff Curtis puts his sunglasses on before he goes 100%.
Oh, that's the dream. He's cool as fuck when he does that. No one's ever been cooler in cinema. That's such a cool move.
I also love that Michelle Yeoh is like talking to him. He just doesn't respond.
He doesn't need to. He doesn't need her words anymore. He's got the fucking
sun.
He's
fully fixed on jacking it to the sun. Well, that is all the Scaredy Talk we have for this episode. I've been Damo.
I've been Sean.
I've been Tom.
And if you beautiful Scaredy listeners like this show, would like to help us out and help yourself out as well, you can join Patreon for just $5 a month at scaredyboys.com/Patreon. There's a whole bunch of beautiful, delicious, good Scaredy Boys episodes that you should definitely get your teeth into. Otherwise, you can leave us a review if you listen, that helps quite a lot. Or if you'd like to say hi, recommend movies, all that other good stuff, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com, or you can find us on socials at Scaredy Boys or Scaredy Boys Podcast. And individually, I'm at DamianRob.Ryder.
I'm at Carney from 55.
I'm at Awkward Trade.
Stay scared, everyone. Talk about staring into the sun. Oh my days.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.